Hey everyone, sorry about the delay on this episode. It is Thursday and this episode is going out, which normally goes out on Sunday or Monday. But as they say, it's better late than never.
It's full 10.
Better late than never!
You guys ready?
Watch it.
We've been to some of the most chaotic, war-torn places in the world, but never for something as bizarre as this.
Here we are. Welcome to Eden Parish.
You guys built all this?
Father had a vision, and we built heaven here on Earth.
Who is Father?
He's the guy that started all of this.
Can we speak with him at some point?
He agreed to sit for an interview tonight at the gathering.
It's been pretty amazing. Everyone we've talked to seems to feel that this is everything they ever wanted, and they all credit you for that.
Oh, I don't deserve the credit. You come down here, and I'll give you a place to live. I'll give you a job. I'll give you a bed. These people are my family, my children. And when you write this up, just know that you're dealing with their lives.
Guns.
You don't know what's really going on here. This place is not what it seems.
Hey, what's happening? These people want to leave. They have their suitcases packed. I have no idea what to do. Sam, do not get involved in this!
Please take my daughter.
What?
We can't let them go back to New York. Oh, this is the last sacrament.
Hey! Hey!
How many more people can fit in this thing?
Take the camera. I want you to film this. It's important.
Yes,
Father. Take it. Take it. Take it.
Fix me, Jesus. Fix me.
Where you going, Rudy?
I'm in the goddamn club, aren't I?
Hi, this is Justin.
And Anna.
And welcome to the Reddit Horror Club. This week's selection is my selection, The Sacrament. So without further ado, let's jump on in.
And now our feature presentation.
All right.
Anna, what do you think? What do you think of my pick?
It's not a terrible movie.
Okay.
But I think it's kind of incredibly irresponsible filmmaking. Because, you know, like, at the end of the movie, it's like, oh, 100-something-something people died in this tragedy. And this is, like, mirrors exactly the Jonestown Massacre, almost.
Sure.
And 914 people really lost their lives.
Right,
I think
right.
If he was going to make this move, why not just call it what it is?
I can see that. That's a really fair question. Why not? Because it literally... Outside of names and a couple details, there's not a whole lot of difference,
right?
Between the real story and this, so that's certainly true. So why not just make a story about the Jonestown? I don't know. That's actually a really, really fair question. And I guess I'm probably not going to get a chance to ask Ty West that, but
okay.
If I could, that's a pretty fair question. I mean. And saying it's irresponsible is kind of true in that, you know, at the end, you make a point there that they talk about 160-something lives, and the real death toll was, you know, 900 or so, right? That's what you – I'm pretty sure it was pretty high.
Yeah, the exact number is 914, and until 9/11, it was the greatest American tragedy.
Yeah, yeah. So really, and I don't know if there was some kind of legal reason he couldn't go straight into the movie. I don't know.
I don't see why not. There's a made-for-TV
movie.
Right,
you're right. I mean, I don't see why not either. So that's a pretty fair question. So moving aside from that, which is a really, really interesting thing to look at, which maybe we can revisit after we talk a little bit about the film itself, you said you thought it was not a bad movie. So unpack that a little for me.
Okay. You know, it was well acted. I think I really respect Ty West as an upcoming horror movie director. I think, you know, if he keeps trucking along the way he does, you know, he could maybe be the future of horror along with some other young up-and-coming directors.
Sure. I mean, it's fair to argue that he's one of the, you know, possible future masters of horror, if you will.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I would definitely argue that. That's fair.
Very capable hands. Again, the story, you know, it goes along pretty much like the Jonestown Massacre, so I don't really feel like I need to unpack.
No. Although I do think it's well written, personally, like, as far as, like, being able to take that story and write well about it, as far as, like, the way the dialogue feels extremely natural. I mean, some of it was probably improvised as well. I know A.J. Bowen is you know, someone that, having listened to him talk and stuff, I know he improvises a little bit and tries to make things real natural in the way he speaks. So
does Joe Swanberg.
Okay, cool. Well, then there was probably a lot of that between those guys. I would imagine. So, I mean, so that might be part of why it felt so natural. I'm a Vice watcher, actually, not every episode or anything. But having a good amount of experience watching Vice, it really does feel like it could be a legitimate Vice episode or like a Vice movie. Like the setup and even the type of story, like if something like Jonestown were happening now, Vice would literally go out and try to immerse themselves in it. I mean, they would. So I do think that was a really interesting angle. And I'd be interested in finding out, you know, why Ty West wrote it as such, or if he's a fan of Vice or if someone else brought it up, but I do think it was a cool way to go about it. So I agree with you. I think it was well acted. I think it was well written. And ultimately, I think it's I could see people, and I think I've read this criticism from maybe horror purist types who really just want to be, you know, scared in the more traditional sense. But it's very much a dread-inducing type movie.
But that's what Ty West is great at.
Right, I agree.
Dread.
I agree. And I think that this is a great example of that. Because throughout the whole movie, you know, from the beginning, it's weird, you know, what's going on. You know, when they get to the compound and there's guys with, you know, AK-47s or M-16s, or whatever they are, you know, machine guns. And that's, you know, kind of weird with this peace-loving hippies and they've got machine guns. But then, you know, weird things just keep kind of slowly creeping in with things people say, and then when that Savannah girl shows up, you know, that's really where things start to really get creepier. and I think that she's a good mechanism for bringing in some of that. And I ultimately just think, for me, it's a bit of a slow burn, a bit of a, you know, well, it's not a bit, it's definitely a slow burn, because not a whole lot happens as far as like real action until the end, but I'm cool with that. I mean, I really like that when it's done well, you know. And I think it's funny because I think I kind of complained about that a little bit when we talked about Lords of Salem, but because I don't think it was done as well, and maybe like we talked about with Lords of Salem, the actors here might have been a little stronger because they kind
of
pinned that movie on the back of Sherry Moon Zombie, I think, is more known for how she looks than how she acts. So,
right.
Yeah. So, was there anything about it besides the fact that you questioned the ethics of it, you know, that didn't resonate with you, or you think they could have done better?
I think, like, maybe the most horrifying scene for me in the movie is when Caroline injects Patrick with the syringe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty bad. That whole scene, and everything that comes after it, it's just like their whole interaction at that point, you know, the syringe, and him, you know, when he starts to actually, you know, you see it getting into his blood and he's, you know, oh God, I don't even want to talk about it. It's really creepy. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Well, cause it's basically, you're basically watching essentially the same thing that happens when you give someone a lethal injection. And cause that's essentially what it was, you know?
Right. I think that, you know, when you go through those particular, like the ending scenes, it's just mm-hmm. so more dramatic when you think that this shit really happened.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's definitely true. And I mean, I agree with you that's probably one of the most unnerving scenes for me too. And, you know, and when she is beyond, you know, she feels like she's beyond, you know, that point and everything, and she just douses herself in gasoline and lights it. And then she starts screaming, you know, how someone really would run around screaming when they're on fire. That whole, everything about that, their interaction and the death, that's definitely one of the things that gets me most for sure. I also, you know, even though I've seen this before, a few times actually, I hadn't seen it in a bit, and rewatching it just the other day, I when Joe Swanberg's character, you know, the cameraman guy is running back to tell the helicopter to wait, I knew it was coming, and yet it still got me when the helicopter guy got shot, because it just kind of like, boom, in the middle of talking, it just happened. And I was like, oh, crap. And I jumped, you know, like it was one of the few, you know, maybe jump type moments for me in the movie, but it got me. I guess just because even though I knew it was coming, I just for some reason felt like I was going to be more ready for it. And then it just came, you know?
Yeah.
And that one gets me because, you know, he's their way out, you know? So that's, you know, horrifying to think that their only way out could be gone. Because there is no other way out. And they're very clear about that in the beginning that, you know, there's only one road and you can't get to the road but by air. And, you know, I mean, so it's creepy to me. And I think to a certain extent for me, I grew up in the suburbs. I grew up in a very populated part of the suburbs of North Jersey, though. So it's for a lot of people, if you're in the Midwest or something, a suburb out there is probably not nearly as insane. And like mine's more urban in feel. And so to me, I grew up in kind of the concrete jungle in a way. And for me, that being in the wilderness that far away from stuff is really scary, actually. It's not something I do feel peace, you know, when I have, but I still have to be within like a half hour drive of civilization. And that I don't know if I could handle being that secluded.
I know what that's like, because for 8 months of last year, I lived in this tiny town called Braxton in Mississippi, and they don't spray for bugs out there. You've got a very rural, like, dirt driveway. Your neighbor's, like, a mile down the road. It's you can hear coyotes in the distance. You know, it's interesting, and you have to drive about 45 minutes to get to the biggest city, like the capital.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's unsettling, for sure, especially if you're more of a city person, which I really am at heart, and it was not mm-hmm. easy for me to live out in the nowhere.
Right. So, yeah, so even that part of the whole thing put me on edge, too, just watching it. I mean, the fact that they're in the middle of nowhere and there's really no way they can get help. I mean, even if they could radio for someone, it would take that person a day, you know, to get there. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's, I think that, also what got me was the, just, it always gets me, you know, the real story gets me in the, you know, when the parents, you know, feeding the drink to their kids, just as a parent for me, like I can just not imagine. And I get that they're brainwashing, you know, and everything that they're thinking they're actually kind of saving their kids. But man,
they're probably being shot to death.
Right. I mean, I guess it is better than being shot to death. That's true. But man, I just, it's hard to think about that. You know, so like you know, I had mentioned when I posted the post for this, not the discussion post, but the post last week, that there's another movie with a similar type theme on Netflix right now that just came out this year called The Veil. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
Okay. Well, it's not the same style movie in any way, but it's also a Jim Jones. In fact, in that one, is the character's name is even Jim. It's kind of a Jim Jones story, except like the difference is there's in the story of The Veil, there's one lone survivor, and it's a little 5-year-old girl.
Oh.
And the 5-year-old girl doesn't know who her parents were, doesn't know any of that because they're all gone. And she doesn't remember. You know, the trauma has just wiped out all of her memory. And so you're 25 years later, she's approached by these kids, well, Jessica Alba and her brother, and they ask her, you know, if she'll come with them to the site, you know, because they're trying to get answers, as many answers as they can, about what happened, because their father was one of the FBI agents in this movie who got there and actually ultimately got killed in the standoff initially, because I guess in this story, this version of the story, they got there to intervene, but they were too late for most of the people. So, and okay. Then everybody, yeah, so it's interesting. But, so the whole story of what happened, which is, this is way more fictionalized, this version, it's told through them watching these videos that are being made to chronicle everything that's going on the camp compound by this Jim Jones character. I forget his last name in the movie, but he's Jim as well. And he specifically, I was going blank. The actor. The guy who played the Punisher in the 90s. Punisher.
Thomas Jane.
Yeah, Tom Jane. Yep. Yeah, and he's unnerving as hell. Because he's very, funny enough, he's like another Jim in his demeanor. He's very Jim Morrison-y. He's got like
okay.
this like longer hair, and he's kind of like got this real like way about him. What you proceed in this story, without ruining it, because I would definitely recommend it, is that they start showing these tapes, and some supernatural stuff is happening, and they're documenting it. And then there's a pretty great twist at the end. And I'll just leave it at that. But so it's way more fictionalized, but I thought it was interesting to watch them. I watched them both back-to-back. And so it was interesting to see kind of a more straight-ahead documentary style of, you know, the more or less what really happened, and then this story that's more of a ghost story around that kind of thing. So I would definitely highly recommend it. I'm trying very hard not to like use spoiler words. So, but
right.
it's really good, and really good as in I'm not going to say it's like a 4-star out of 5 movie, but really good as in it was probably a good 3, 3.5, and I'd recommend it to anyone who's interested in this kind of stuff. Like, because I've always been fascinated with kind of two weird subcultures that have fascinated me, one being cults and the other one being hate groups. And I've always been fascinated with, like, and both of them in a lot of ways because of the brainwashing that goes into programming people.
Right.
And I think that's a large part of why they fascinate me, because I don't get how people can believe these things. So I've always been really fascinated, and this particular film is different in that the reason they believe is they actually experience and witness it, and so it's a little bit, you know, it's like legit supernatural craziness, but it's definitely something I'd recommend. But I definitely would say that as a real, like, an example of a good, well-made movie and all that, that I would definitely say The Sacrament is a better of the two. I definitely would recommend The Veil as well. So there's my other plug to check out for anyone. But I'm a big fan of the Sacrament. That's why I picked it. But now the one thing I'm thinking about is exactly what you brought up in the beginning. You know, is there kind of an ethical question? Is it kind of irresponsible to make this film and not pay appropriate homage to the people who really did lose their lives?
I get it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, And I wonder if anyone's ever asked Ty West that. I wonder if anybody who was, a lost family in the massacre you know, reached out to his camp upset. You know, I don't know. It's an interesting thing to, you know, look into. I don't know if I'd be able to find anything on it, but definitely something that interests me to find out, because you're right, and especially in the fact that I think even if you fictionalized it the way he did and all, it probably would have been nice for there to be, like, this film is dedicated to the survivors of, you know, you know, or whatever. And he definitely didn't do that. And so that does kind of question, you know, it does kind of make it feel like it's exploiting a situation without paying it appropriate homage.
Yeah.
So I completely get that for sure. So my question to you then moving forward with it is, you stash or trash this movie?
I would stash it, but I'd probably never watch it again.
So you like it, but you don't know that you'd watch it. Okay.
Like, I appreciate the quality and the acting and the directing, but, you know, it still just kind of upsets me a little.
Right. And I mean, there's an added layer of, you know, unsettling or being upset by it, by what you brought up, too, which, again, I hadn't really thought about, but I completely vibe that for sure. And I for me, I would definitely stash it. I have watched it at this point, I think, 4 times fully through. And each time it hasn't lost its punch. In fact, this last time, I think it hit me a little harder, especially some other specific points of it. Like I said, I didn't remember, like I knew it was coming, and yet I still like was jumped when that guy got shot. And, you know, the kids thing really resonated with me more this time. Even though, like, every time I've seen this movie, when it came out, I already had kids, so it's not like this is, you know, through a new lens, but it's just, for some reason, it hit me more this time. So I would definitely stash it, but I can't say that it's something I rewatch often, although it's only been out since 2013, and I've seen it about 4 times, so I guess I rewatch it a decent amount, needless to say. So I guess that's really all I have about The Sacrament. Another interesting point kind of to tack onto this, and this is applicable probably to this whole round, but this is kind of my plug for things that I've been reading or watching lately, but I specifically got to go to a really cool event, and there's a film festival in Philadelphia called the Cinadelphia Film Festival, and it's not the same as the Philadelphia Film Festival, which is like a big, you know, a big to do with Hollywood folk and whatnot, and a lot of indies as well. But it's this thing done by a place called the Philomoka, which the Philomoka is really cool. It's in the Eraserhead, the neighborhood that Eraserhead was filmed in. And it's actually a storefront that used to sell mausoleums and headstones. So literally the front of the building just says mausoleums, and there's no signs otherwise. And you go in, and they gutted it, and they redid it, and it's cool. It's got a little stage. It's a small space, but it's really intimate, really cool. And they do a lot of films, concerts, kind of all different types of events there. And so that is where they base this film festival out of, because they run it. In the past, they've done things at multiple venues. This year, they decided to do everything there. But the film I got to go see is called Sympathy for the Devil. And it's about the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which was a cult that initially kind of sprung out as a splinter group from Scientology, but went in a completely different direction. And these British folk that were originally part of the early inner circle of Scientology left. And, of course, then Scientology kind of hated them and did try to get them in trouble later because they don't take kindly to people leaving.
Right, yeah.
But they left and they started their own church, I guess is the way to put it. I don't know what to call it. But they call it the Process Church of the Final Judgment. Originally they called it The Process, and the name kind of changed through the years. But it was started in the, I guess, the late 50s, early 60s in England, and it really kind of morphed throughout, and it was very occultish, but also not. I don't know how to explain it. They worshipped Jesus, Satan, and Lucifer, And their explanations were like Jesus was, you know, kind of the good, and Lucifer was kind of represented like, oh God, it's so hard to distinguish the difference between Satan and Lucifer. There was a difference in that, and I believe Satan was the darkest of the three. But they were kind of like on this spectrum, and different members of the church were more along the lines of different ones. There were ones who were more aligned with Jesus, and there were more that were aligned with, so it's kind of interesting, but they're all still part of the same church. And the movie was fascinating because they got a rap for being part of a lot of different things, like conspiracies about are you familiar with the Cropsey legend? Have you seen the movie Cropsey?
I've seen Cropsey, yes.
Okay. They're mentioned in Cropsey because there's a point where they're talking about how the Cropsey legend is they're giving kids to this cult, that they believe they're giving these kids to this cult that lives in New York, and that didn't really happen, but the cult didn't quite, that they were supposedly doing that was the process. So really interesting, not they, but he, you know, Cropsey, but whatever, the guy. So there's a lot of interesting things about it that just kind of blew me away, because really they were just a bunch of weirdos who got blamed for a lot of bad stuff because they were around during the whole Satanic Panic stuff. By that point, they were kind of getting berated, and they got associated with Manson, even though they never were associated with Manson, because I guess there was links from Manson to Scientology, even though it wasn't a real link. And I guess when they went to see the Scientologists were like, no, he's not part of us, he's part of them. And kind of try to throw them under the bus. So a lot of really crazy stuff, but ultimately he came out to be this like a documentary about this group. And it's just really interesting watching these people, and what their ideology changed, and and the really cool part about it for me was that there was a Q&A with the director, a woman who spent a lot of time with the church, but never was technically part of the church, and a guy named Father Malachi, who was part of the church and one of the high ranking people in the church. And man, it was really, really interesting to hear them all talk about this stuff. And Father Malachi is a much more normal, down-to-earth dude now, living in New York as a graphic designer, but and an old man. But it was fascinating to me. And so I bring it up because I think it's really applicable to this whole round in a way. And I'd recommend it to anyone. Although getting a copy of it is basically impossible at this point because it's still not a final version. So he's screening it and changing it as it goes. So I'm hoping that means he'll release the movie in the next year or so, but apparently he's been screening it for like a year and a half because he's like a super perfectionist. He's adding stuff in.
Okay.
But, yeah. Then taking stuff out because now he thinks during the Q&A he thought it was 15 minutes too long. So now he has to go take stuff out.
All right.
Yeah, he's definitely a weird perfectionist about it. But the one other interesting tidbit that I didn't know anything about is George Clinton, Parliament Funkadelic. They had two albums that were very much based on some of the theological works of the Process Church. And
really?
Father Malachi, who was at this Q&A, is actually thanked in two of the liner notes and wrote a bunch of stuff for their liner notes as well. So it's kind of crazy to me. It makes me want to go back and listen to this stuff. I mean, the stuff that they focused on was really kind of the positivity side of it all, because that's what Parliament, you know, was always about. But it was really interesting. So, again, people should keep their eyes out. And if I, you know, hear about it actually being released, I'll definitely plug it again. But that was kind of my one thing that I wanted to highlight that I've been, you know, into lately. Is there anything that you've been reading or watching or whatever that you'd want to plug?
Have I? I can't honestly say that I've watched anything like current or done anything
mm-hmm.
super current, but I have been replaying through Fallout 3. I just got out of the Dunwich building, which if anyone who's ever played Fallout 3 would know, it's for one a reference to the Dunwich Horror by H.P. Lovecraft,
mm-hmm.
and it is a very creepy building, and it's full of
mm-hmm.
ghouls Yeah,
yeah, that's really cool because the Dunwich Horror. I mean, I've seen the movie. I've never read Lovecraft's book, but I've seen. Yeah, I do. I know I should, but I've seen the film, the British film on the Dunwich Horror, and then also there's a lot of references to Dunwich in other in several other, you know, name horror movies that pay homage to it. So that struck a chord with me, even though I've never played Fallout. That's pretty cool. A creepy building called Dunwich, you know, that's pretty awesome.
So that's pretty much what I've been up to.
cool. And so then I guess everyone, I hope you're sticking with us. We're trying to get back into a normal schedule now. This episode will be a couple days late, but we'll be on time with the next one. That we can assure you. And so come back next week for Anna's pick. What's your pick, Anna?
Don't Look Now,
which is a classic. And hopefully those of you who haven't seen it can get your hands on a copy because it is a brilliant film. So I'll put that out there right away so I think you know which way I'm going to be leaning in the next episode. But hey.
Since it's my pick, I think you know which way I'm leaning as well.
Yeah, I probably would try to get a dissenting voice, except I don't know anyone that doesn't like it, to be honest, so that's seen it. So, hey, hopefully somebody can tell us where we're wrong next week.
Yeah.
So. All right, see you guys next week.
Next week. Your mind and your ass will follow. The kingdom of heaven is within. Free your mind and your ass will follow. The kingdom of heaven is within. Your mind and your eyes will follow. The kingdom of heaven is within. Open up your funky mind and you can fly. Free your mind, your eyes will follow. For the kingdom of heaven is within.
Yeah.
If he knew we were talking to you.
Who?
Father. This place is not what it seems. They hurt people who go against the parish. Please, you have to help us.
We're saying what do you mean?
They keep it secret, but it happens. Father will not let us leave. We're prisoners here. You are being manipulated.
We talked with plenty of people. They all seem happy.
No, you talked with who Father wanted you to talk with. Many other people want to leave, but they're afraid to speak out. Understand the hold he has over a lot of them. They're brainwashed and don't even know it. They'll do anything he asks.